to call into session the April 21st, 2009 session of the House Subcommittee on Workforce Development. And just to make it official, our subcommittee, not unlike a number of other committees in this building, continues to await fiscal statements on our bills. This may be an abbreviated morning because of that. There are some folks, I believe, who signed up for a public hearing on House Bill 3475.
Yes, sir.
Tim. Sounds
good. Looks like he's got something.
Okay, thank you. With that, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3475. And I'd like to call up, please, Gene Dernan, please, from NECA.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. For the record, my name's Gene Dernan. I'm the operations manager of Salem Fire Alarm, which is a limited energy electrical contractor. I'm here to speak in support of this bill today. The work alone status is a very important part of the apprenticeship program. With the change in the apprenticeship from 4 years to 3 years, it became necessary, I think, to get this language in there to where we can continue to have this work alone status. As part of the apprenticeship program, as you can imagine, when a person starts the apprenticeship, they're not concerned with making any decisions. They're still trying to get used to the terminology that's used, being able to quickly decipher the difference between a 6-foot and an 8-foot ladder, things of this nature. As long as they continue through the apprenticeship program, they begin to get more involved in the decision-making processes on a job. Many times journeymen will ask them for opinion on how to handle a situation in order to help them continue with this learning process. But at some point in time, until the person actually takes on the responsibility for those decisions, you really don't have a way of judging where they stand in their apprenticeship program. Okay. And this is where I feel it's a very important part. As in many ways in life, those who don't have to take the responsibility are usually the ones with the most opinions. It's very important to us at the end of that apprenticeship program, before they're actually expected to take on the responsibility of a journeyman that may have an apprentice working for them, we really need that period of time to be able to judge them, to go out, usually in very limited situations, to be able to work on their own, make decisions, be able to observe those decisions, and work through them if they still need some additional training. So for us, it's a very important part of the apprenticeship program.
Thank you very much. Mr. Dernan, could you kind of a 30,000-foot elevation, what is it that you're trying to accomplish with this bill? And I know that you've just given us testimony, and I think without my attempting to put words in your mouth, that we're trying to fledge the apprentices, give them their wings so that they can take off.
It's my understanding that the work alone has been in the past has been there. But it was not statutorily as a percentage of the hours of the apprenticeship program. It was actually dictated as the number of hours within a certain number of hours program that you had to attain these hours. When the limited energy apprenticeship program changed from a 4-year program to a 3-year program, we have to go back and reestablish what those hours are. There's just not an automatic, well, if the apprenticeship program is only 3 years now, then 80% or whatever that percentage would be sufficient to work alone.
I see.
That this is strictly something that needs to, it's basically to reestablish but has been working in the state,
okay.
but doesn't automatically fall into place with just the change in the number of years of the apprenticeship.
Okay. And I have a question here that you may or may not be able to answer, so I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I'm just trying to get my arms around this bill a little better. I feel that it is a little awkward, potentially, for us as a legislature to be directing the State Apprenticeship Training Council, thou shalt do the following, when, in my mind, that's what the State Apprenticeship Training Council does. And so can you help me through that, why we as a legislature would be making those directions? And again, I'm not, sir, trying to put you
no,
on the spot.
And no, that's fine, because I think you've hit on my, potentially my ignorance of where we got to the first version, if that had actually been done at Boley or if it was done legislatively. But it's my understanding that this is not a situation that can be accomplished through rule, but I don't have enough history of,
okay.
of how the original work alone status came. So
okay.
I'm afraid I am not the person to answer that question.
All right. And can you tell me, do you know if apprentices in other crafts and trades have similar arrangements?
No. I can't speak
you're
to
you're
that.
Okay.
Only the electrical trade,
okay.
I'm afraid.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Additional questions or comments for Mr. Dernan?
Yes, Representative Colby.
Thank you. I'm curious, does this, I'm reading the bill, and so an electrician apprentice could work alone after they've completed 5,000 hours according of on-the-job training, according to what I'm reading. And is that for all license categories for electricians, or is this just for limited?
As I understand it, it would only be for programs that are a 6,000-hour program would be allowed to work alone at 5,000 hours. And by the best of my knowledge, the limited energy program would be the only three-year program.
So,
again, I speak primarily from the limited energy end of it.
Okay. So the limited follow-up.
Yes.
So the limited energy is a 6,000-hour program.
Yes, sir.
And the 8,000-hour program is a, I guess, a regular electrical. I don't know what you would call them. Not limited.
Industrial strength.
And so it would be 8,000. I'm just curious about that, because I'm not aware of any other trades that have this provision to, you know, for apprentices to work alone. You know, they all have their ratios to make sure there's, you know, somebody overseeing the project and overseeing the work and the safety habits of the apprentice. But I'm not against this concept. It just seems like if they're ready to work alone, they should be journeymen. But I, you know, I'm not an electrician, so maybe this fits the particular craft pretty well. I was just curious whether or not we had Mr. Chair Boley or somebody from the State Apprenticeship Council to talk to us about this.
Thank you, Representative Colby. We don't have anyone signed up at this point. That's precisely what I was looking for, and frankly, it would. It would help me if, in addition, we had someone from the apprenticeship, IBEW's Apprenticeship Training Center, to help inform me, because I have to be very candid. When we're speaking 6,000 or 8,000 hours, I mean, I'm thinking the difference of probably one full year of being an apprentice, and I frankly am not adequately equipped with the necessary background to make a determination whether that's an appropriate move to make or not. So I too, Representative Holby, need some additional information.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I can speak to the limited energy version of this. And I think that one of the things that you may need to understand is that for limited energy contractors such as Salem Fire Alarm, when we man up a job, we typically have two gentlemen on the job, a journeyman and an apprentice. Unlike a lot of major electrical contractors that may have a general foreman, may have several foremen, may have several journeymen, and also have limited energy journeymen and apprentices. In those type of companies, these gentlemen have quite a long time to be able to develop all these skills. In fact, during the course of their career, they may never be asked to take on any kind of responsibility. But historically, in our trade, once you become a journeyman, you're out there with an apprentice. You're not going to spend another 5 years as a journeyman working under the direct supervision of a general journeyman. And so, like I said, it's a very crucial time. As an employer, I am certainly not going to. I'm going to be very careful about the areas where I'm going to put this gentleman that can work alone. But it's very important to me before he is out there with another apprentice that I can be sure that he can communicate well with the customer, that he can make a decision now that he's given the responsibility to make that decision, when he has nobody else to basically point the finger at. So it's a very important part, because as soon as he hits that third year, now he may be on jobs with apprentices, and now is not the best time to be able to find out where that gentleman has got those traits and has developed those skills yet. So with particular attention to our industry, it is very important. To take it one step further, in many states, with our particular license, there are 4 years is excessively long to begin with, which is, I think, why the rollback to three, since the trade does basically deal with circuits that are incapable of causing fires or electrocuting anybody.
Okay. That, sir, was exactly what I was needing. I was trying to get my arms around why we were proposing this in the first place. Representative Bolden.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I do gain a little bit of comfort with this bill after looking at it a little closer, because it appears to me that there already exists in statute this work alone model for non-limited electricians, where if they've completed 6,500 hours of their 8,000-hour apprenticeship training of on the job training, I assume that they can work alone. So it appears to me that this bill is just adding the ability of the limited electricians to have that same sort of model after working 5,000 hours of their 6,000-hour requirement for the limited license, which is 2,000 hours shorter than the non-limited license. So it looks like it's the same model, and, you know, noticing that NECA is, you know, the contractor association, and I see that IBEW is also supportive of this, so you have both the labor and management side of the training folks that oversee these programs for this specific trade are in support. So I'm quite a bit more comfortable with it. It would have been nice to have the Apprenticeship Council weigh in on this to see how that is working, but evidently the trades and the contractors seem to think it's working for them. So.
Thank you, Representative Holby. That's helpful, and I agree that that additional information would be appropriate here, Mr. Dernan. As you said, this is low energy, and so am I correct in assuming then that there's not a there's not a direct threat to the individual who's working strictly with low voltage in terms of electrocution, as you said?
Correct. Our license is limited to what they would call 100 VA.
Okay.
Technically, it's Class 2 and Class 3 wiring.
Mm-hmm.
And by definition, Class 2 and Class 3 wiring is incapable. It has been determined to be incapable of causing an electrocution or starting a fire.
Okay.
Outside of that, it would become Class 1.
Okay. And please excuse my ignorance here, but would there be instances where someone working around a low voltage line might come in contact with high energy lines that would pose a safety risk either to the electrician or some member of the public?
I would say no. No more than any other tradesman on a construction project. There's always risks on a job, safety issues that you're looking at. If you're a painter, you need to stay away from
yes.
open electrical panels.
Okay.
So it would be no different than anybody else out there.
So normal precautions would prevail here.
Absolutely.
And how many workers would typically be on a low voltage job?
For us, and we do predominantly systems, so we're doing fire alarms, intercoms, nurse calls, things of that nature. Typically, we have two people on a job.
Two people.
You have other companies that when they're heavily involved in voice and data, telecommunications work, because the nature of the amount of cable that they're pulling in the building, they need more manpower to be able to accomplish that task. But again, that's a task where you're pulling a lot of cable, it's unenergized, and even during the course of their installation, typically it will never be energized with anything.
Now, if we had more than one person on a job, does this bill allow or provide for both of those folks, or could potentially be more than two? Would this bill allow multiple people to all be apprentices without any journeyman supervision?
In other words, could I put two individuals on the job, both in a work alone status?
Yes.
I'm not sure if that opens the door for that or not.
Mm-hmm. And if we were to go there, Mr. Dernan, would that, how would that potentially impact apprenticeship training? How would that potentially impact oversight on the job site?
Well, I guess it's a very good question. If both individuals have been determined to be able to work alone,
mm-hmm.
then I see no reason why those two individuals couldn't work together.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, that's not the way a job is going to be stacked,
mm-hmm.
Only because you're trying to lower your average wage on the job. My preference is to have a journeyman and a lower period apprentice where the apprentice is learning from the journeyman.
Yes.
And like I said, we're talking about a 6-month span here in hours. So typically where we use this is we have a follow-up to a job, let's say, that apprentice may have been a part of, and we have a warranty issue. Maybe we have to go out and send out. This is a great opportunity to be able to send this gentleman out there,
mm-hmm.
And be able to show that he can go through there and troubleshoot this system.
Mm-hmm.
I see no incentive to want to put two apprentices in a work-alone status on a job together.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if you could. but I just don't know, because there is limitations to how many apprentices per journeyman.
Kevin, I think you may have some.
Chair Witt, as I'm looking at this and just looking at just the plain text of subsection 3, which is altered by this, the language, as I'm reading this, is in the singular. It says an apprentice electrician. It doesn't say electricians or apprentices or remove it. It at least the plain language, it seems, of the Section 3 is that it is a singular apprentice electrician as opposed to multiple. I don't know if that sheds light or not.
Thank you very much. Representative Denbrough.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Again, as I read the language, it seems that those kinds of questions could potentially be resolved by the local committee, you know, which has rulemaking authority. And as I read it, this is a program that seems to have existed for quite a while, right? The standalone.
Yes.
And although without distinction between high energy and low energy. Are there rules or standards for the degree of oversight that that is given to these apprentices? As it's evolved over time, you mentioned some practices that make good sense to you, but for a program that's been in place for a while, I would think that there would be some sort of industry standards developed through the apprenticeship councils, and I'm wondering if. And then also, if it's not working, there would probably be a record of some complaints about it not working. And those are all assumptions on my part. Are they fair assumptions?
I believe so. Again, I'm kind of speaking out of my area expertise. I can't profess to know all the rules of BOLI. The percentages of supervision that an apprentice can work under, if there's any leeway there that after 1 year he can work 10% unsupervised, these things may exist. It's nothing that we practice. I really can't speak to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if I could just follow up. I mean, this seems like a program that makes a lot of sense in terms of a person's ongoing, sort of career ladder training. And, if it's working already, if it's working well in the other domain, it makes sense to extend it to this one, which is essentially what we're talking about here.
Thank you, Representative Denbrough. I know that... the bill is at the request of the National Electrical Contractors Association. I'm presuming that there's solid ground for for the bill coming forward. But I've come full circle from where I first started with my line of questioning, and I'm wondering, Mr. Dernan, and again, you may not know the answer to this question, whether this proposal has been made before apprenticeship training council, or whether this is the first time this proposal has been made before the legislature. The reason why I ask that question, that answer is important to me, because I feel inadequately equipped to be able to make a decision on this. We are not experts here in the electrical field. The Apprenticeship Training Council is, and for myself, I'm not speaking for the rest of my subcommittee here, but I don't think any of us are journeymen electricians, and for us to be, in essence, instructing the Apprenticeship Council to do the following when they are the experts in this field causes me trouble. I'm not comfortable with that at this point. And I don't know if that's something that that you care to respond to, but that's where my comfort level is at this point.
And I guess I really don't know the true answer to that.
Okay.
I know that basically, in simplistic terms, mm-hmm. when the And as I understood this to be statutorily, when the LEA license program went from 4 years to 3 years, that the work alone status did not get encompassed in that change.
Okay.
And it was found out after the fact that we have lost this work alone status.
I see.
Now, how it originally became there, whether Bowie was not involved with the three-year program, so and the legislature did that, so the legislature is now responsible for it. That I just don't know the answer to your question.
Thank you very much for your candor here.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, I think that if we don't take action on this legislation, then it essentially ends the standalone program for people in the low energy program, right? Because in existing statutes, there's a 6,500 hour period. After one has worked 6,500 hours, one qualifies for standalone. Well, this entire program is now 6,000 hours. So, if we don't do the proration, then it can't apply to the low energy program. Isn't that essentially true?
Yes, sir. I believe that's the reason that the bill has been put forth, is to basically maintain the status quo that we had before as far as that percentage of time that individual could work alone and be able to be observed in those type of processes.
Okay, great. Mr. Dernan, thank you very, very much. I certainly appreciate your coming forward on this bill and your candor as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'd like to call up now, please, Rick Thomas. Perhaps can shed a little more light and maybe get me past my misgivings.
We know you guys are trying to move a lot of bills. For the record, Rick Thomas with Independent Electrical Contractors of Oregon Association administers both general journeyman electrician apprenticeship programs as well as limited energy programs. And a couple of years ago, the legislature did narrow down from 4 years to 2 years that Class A license. When it was 4 years, I think as Representative Dumbra had noted, it was easily covered in that work alone card situation that the general journeymen enjoy. Whether it was a drafting error or what, they somehow did not foresee the fact that going to 6,000 hours that was disappearing. And so I think the intent of this bill is to reestablish that situation. It still must go through the whole process for the apprenticeship committees, individual apprenticeship committees, to grant that individual that work alone card. Additionally, the work alone standards have to go through the standards revision process that will go through BOLI for each individual committee. I would believe in this situation, just because everybody's had to change their standards down to that 6,000 hours, they'll have to do those modifications. I mean, it'd be nice if we had BOLI here to kind of back us up, but my understanding would be they'd still have to go through the State Apprenticeship Council, modify those standards, and be granted the structure in which they're going to do that. And typically, I know in a general journeyman, typically it even says, they're working alone on a project, which means working alone as opposed to having multiple work alone individuals on that project, because then they're not working alone, they are working with somebody. And so that would go back into a ratio type situation. Additionally, most standards by apprenticeship committees view it as, if there's a general journeyman, if there's a work alone and another apprentice on the site, they're probably going to be out of ratio because you've got two apprentices, again, on that project. Most standards also recognize the number of hours the individual can work alone on a specific project, so that you're not going to see a situation where for a major project that's multiple days or weeks in duration, that a work alone apprentice did that entire project, that there is a journeyman's oversight on that project along the way as well.
Okay, so going back to that 30,000 foot question that I asked Mr. Dernan earlier, this bill is not so much a matter of the legislature instructing the Apprenticeship Training Council to do something that to date they have not done for whatever reason, but rather this would be more enabling legislation so that they could do something that perhaps they have wanted to do all along.
Yes, and it would allow joint apprenticeship committees to put that into their standards for approval by the State Apprenticeship Council.
Okay. that perspective is very helpful to me. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Additional questions or comments? Yes, Representative Holby.
Thank you. I really don't have a lot of problems with this bill. It just seems, having the Apprenticeship Council weigh in on this would be really great, but it is sort of existing statute, and for whatever reason that this is in statute, I mean, from my knowledge, the Apprenticeship Council could approve this without statute, it would seem to me. I mean, the Apprenticeship Council approves standards for all local committees, essentially, and so for whatever reason, this particular provision wasn't able to be approved by the council without some sort of statute that allowed the work-alone status?
My understanding is right now the statute only enables them to do it for 8,000-hour program licensees, because it wasn't envisioned when they scaled it back to a 6,000 that hadn't been put into statute to allow them to do that.
I'll follow up, Mr. Chair, but I guess it's from my perspective, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong on this, that the Apprenticeship and Training Council oversees all the standards and all for all apprenticeship programs for all the trades, and it seems like they would be able to make those sorts of recommendations or make those sorts of changes without statute and approve those requirements, but clearly this has been in statute before for the electrical trade, and for whatever reason I don't see it that this bill is really changing much from the status quo, but it is kind of curious that we're directing the council to adopt rules is, I think, the thing that the chair is having trouble with, that we're telling the council that they need to adopt rules on what they and what they do with a local committee. And generally, it's been the other way around, where local committees submit their standards for approval to the council. And so this statute is basically saying, no, the legislature is going to tell the council what particular rule in this instance they're going to adopt.
Chairman Witt, Representative Holby, I think the other piece of this as well is there's a Building Codes Division piece, and I'm 90% positive that actually this work-alone card is issued by Building Codes Division, and I think some of it has to do with, the cross point of that as well, that the State Apprenticeship Council there seems to be a piece missing after that last revision last time around, that it deals with some of the licensing side of it as well, I think, because it's a licensed trade, that full ability is not there.
All right, that was a missing piece.
Yep. All right, additional questions or comments for Mr. Thomas? Not seeing any. Thank you very much, sir. Anyone else want to testify on House Bill 3475 before we close public testimony? Seeing no one, I'm going to close a public hearing on House Bill 3475, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3475. Committee members, anybody want to send this up to the big committee?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3475 to the full committee on business and labor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Holdy moves House Bill 3475 to the Business and Labor Committee with a due pass recommendation. Questions, discussion on the motion? Yes, Representative Holdy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Like I said, I don't really have a lot of problem with this bill. It seems like it's a pretty minor change to existing statute that accommodates the low-energy three-year course that, as described, inadvertently got left out of the defining the work-alone status when they went to 3 years. It would be nice to be able to have the Oregon State Apprenticeship Council, weigh in on this at the full committee, though.
I agree. Further discussion on the motion?
Yes. Chair Witt, members of the committee, what I will do is we'll follow up with them distinctly and find out, and at a minimum see if we can get them to submit some kind of written testimony. Obviously, the main committee will have that if they choose to provide it. For Representative Dembro, Representative Huffman, who are not on the committee, I'll forward, for what it's worth, information to you, provided I receive it. So.
Yes, Representative Holby.
And Mr. Chair, not that I'm expecting any objection to that. I just don't want the Apprenticeship Council to have the perception that the legislature is usurping their power.
Thank you, Representative Holby. You've captured my qualms here precisely, so I appreciate that suggestion. Anything further? Seeing and hearing none, is there any objection to the motion? I'm not seeing any. Yes, and Representative Esquivel is excused. And with that, the motion passes. The bill is sent to the full committee. All right. Continuing with the soft shoe here. Let's see here. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2429, and I'm going to call up first, please, Hasina Squires. We have some amendments to this bill, and others that have been requested are supposedly in this building someplace. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Hasina Squires, on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon, I certainly wish I knew where those amendments were. But we do have two of the four that we spoke to you about, we meaning myself and former Representative Bob Shipwreck. The first two amendments that you have before you are the Dash 1 Amendment, which this amendment would, what we believe, more accurately characterize the legislative findings that relate to enterprise zones that more distinctly indicate that enterprise zones are a statewide program, not necessarily one that benefits rural Oregon. And then the Dash 2 Amendment is the concept that I spoke to you about a few days ago, allowing school districts and rural fire protection districts to opt out of enterprise zones. And how that would work is that a city or a county that was seeking designation of an enterprise zone would notify, send written notification to all the two taxing districts, which they already do to all of the taxing districts, but specifically school districts and fire districts would be notified by a city or county that was seeking to get a designation of an enterprise zone. And they would describe the zone, explain the exemption, and then explain the process for those two types of districts to opt out of that enterprise zone. And in order to do that, a school district or a fire district would have to make a written election to choose not to participate in the enterprise zone by passing either an ordinance or a resolution declaring that they choose not to do that. And they would need to do it within 60 days of receiving the notification that they had that opportunity to do that. And that's how the opt-out would work out.
Thank you very, very much. Let's see here. While I'm fairly much convinced that the other amendments that are lost in space here someplace do not necessarily impact your amendments, Hasina, I'm going to have you stand by while, Kevin, would you give us an explanation of what we were also hoping we were going to be here today?
Chair Witt, members of the committee, you recall that some of the testimony that was given last Thursday with respect to this was concerning disclosure agreement with companies examining, seeking, or contemplating some kind of participation in enterprise zones. There was a great deal of testimony from both sides, pro and con, about the nature of confidentiality, or rather non-disclosure agreements, and as I understand it, there was an amendment. The request was put down on the 13th or 14th. I think we all might have received this last week. I was looking back at my file after I spoke with Hasina. Again, I believe it may be somewhere down in LC. We're not entirely sure. But the request as a whole, as I understand it, all of four were submitted down around the 13th or 14th. We're going to do some additional searching to see where they're at. But again, as I understand it, these last two dealt with public records and non-disclosure agreements, or at least that's what the sheet that was submitted contemplated.
Thank you very much. Subcommittee members, I'm of a mind to if it's the subcommittee's will to move on these amendments. Any others that show up can catch up in the full committee, but we need to get this bill moving rather than to have it caught up in the process here. Representative Volley, you look like you had something.
I just have a question that maybe Kevin can answer. I know that there's an amendment to another bill in the Business and Labor Committee that also is about prevailing wage in enterprise zones, and was just wondering about the nexus between this bill and that bill.
Lest I look like a deer in headlights, I'm not entirely... I can't answer that question. We don't know.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holvey, these are gut and stuff amendments. So this bill has nothing to do with prevailing wage and will not amendments were adopted to it, at least the dash one and the dash two would remove all of the prevailing wage language from the bill.
So if we had the amendments, it would be a little bit more clear about that. And okay.
But prevailing wage is gone, Representative Holden. So
in this bill,
yes, it is. Okay. It is no more. So, Representative Denbrough, did you have something?
I want to ask Hussein a question. Was it your intent to open these amendments and then have a discussion of each one? Or
yes, it is. If there's a motion by the subcommittee, absolutely.
Okay, well, I can wait for that.
Anything further for Hussein?
Thank
you very, very much. All right, we are in work session. We have before us dash one and dash two amendments. What's the subcommittee's pleasure?
One at a time?
I think one at a time would be best.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the dash one amendments for House Bill 2429.
Vice Chair Huffman has moved the dash one amendments to House Bill 2429. Discussion on that motion? Seeing none, hearing none, is there any objection to the adoption of the dash one amendments? Motion passes.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move that we adopt the dash two amendments to House Bill 2429.
Vice Chair Huffman has moved the dash two amendments to House Bill 2429. Discussion on this motion? Seeing none, hearing none. Is there any discussion? I'm sorry.
Representative Denbrough did have a question earlier. What?
Representative Denbrough, excuse me.
No, mine was actually with the dash one, but it's
okay.
I'm comfortable with that.
Thank you very much.
Is it Chair?
Yes, Representative Holby on the motion.
On the motion, I'm just curious as I'm looking at these whether I'm assuming that we can adopt both the dash one and the dash two without it impacting each other.
That's my understanding, Kevin.
That's my understanding as well, and I'm seeing a nod from the Squires in the back saying that is true.
Okay.
Additional discussion on the motion? Seeing none, hearing none. Is there any objection to the adoption of the Dash 2 amendments? They stand adopted? All right. On the bill. To the big committee.
Mr. Chair, I move that we move House Bill 2429 with the due pass recommendation to the full Committee on Business and Labor.
As amended.
As amended.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Huffman moves House Bill 2429 as amended with the dash one and dash two amendments to the full Committee on Business and Labor. Discussion on the motion. I'm seeing none. I will note that Representative Esquivel is excused. Is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, motion passes. The bill, House Bill 2429, moves to the full committee. Subcommittee members, thank you very much. We have...
Don't count.
I need to close the work session on House Bill 2429. And we have a work session on House Bill 2398 that I'm going to open. Kevin, please. This is challenging. Shucks you. Take it away.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, when I say that we really are trying to get this done, I'm honestly not interested in being smacked by each and every one of you. As I understand it, and I've spoken with Mr. White, who is in the audience right now, you have the revenue statement before you. We do not have the fiscal. I have been told by Mr. White, and not surprisingly, given Cam's involvement and Mr. White's involvement in this bill, the necessary information has been provided to fiscal from CCWD. At this point, other departments, who I will not name, are still trying to get their paperwork to fiscal. I've spoken with the analyst who is trying to get this done as quickly as we can. We discussed possibly moving to recess briefly to give her a chance to see if she could finish it up. As I understand from her, that would probably be pushing it to actually get it down to us. The bottom line is we do not have the fiscal right now. And that's where it stands. On the dash four.
Since we are in work session, thank you very much, Kevin. Subcommittee members, it will be my intent to move this bill out of the subcommittee to the full committee on Thursday, whether we have the necessary paperwork or not. It will, I hope, catch up at the full committee level, should it be necessary for us to move it without it. I do not know any other way to handle this. We have waited and waited and waited, and I'm tired of waiting. Representative Holvey and then Dembro.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your comments. I think we could suspend the rules and go ahead and move it to the full committee without the fiscal if the chair so chose.
Yes, and I'm prepared to do that on Thursday, and so please come. I'm prepared to do that because that will be our last opportunity.
That will be our last opportunity, Chair Witt. And just as an aside, because this is a subcommittee, we could move it without the fiscal. But given, I think, the nature of the components, I think we want to make sure that this committee has an opportunity to weigh in.
And for our audience members who have waited and come to meetings repeatedly with great patience and have help shepherd this bill through the process through the past several months. My apologies. We are all very frustrated, but this bill will be moving out of this subcommittee on Thursday. With that, I'm going to close the work session and carry House Bill 2398 over to Thursday's agenda.
Carry the work session over.
Carry the work session over. All right. For the good of the order, Kevin?
Our last meeting on House bills will be Thursday, and right now I think the only thing on our agenda, given the fact the committee has pushed out 24 and 29 and 3475, will be 2398, and then we will start discussing Senate bills. So.
Very good. Anything else for the good of the order? With that, we stand adjourned until Thursday. Thank you.